everyone, and welcome to a new Retro Raw Rundown. It is Survivor Series weekend 2016, but we are now looking back at the Raw the night after Survivor Series 1996. It's been quite a week here inside the ropes. Sondra got to speak to Jim Cornette about Psycho Sid.
That was pretty fun.
David has bought a house. ICW's tomorrow. Takeover's tonight. Survivor Series tomorrow. The Matt Hardy tour is in a week. There's a lot going on, ladies
and
gentlemen.
There's a lot going on, basically. There's plenty.
So I just thought I'd give you guys a quick update on a couple of things before we start very briefly. So the Matt Hardy, Broken Matt Hardy UK tour is coming to the UK from November 28th to December 5th. So there are still tickets left for London on November 28th, Manchester November 29th, Glasgow on the 4th of December is sold out, and Cork on the 5th of December, there are limited tickets left as well. So yeah, if you want to get the last tickets that are available, and they are the last ones, insidetheropes.co.uk. Also, we've obviously been putting up content this week, the Raw Rundown, the SmackDown Summary, now the Retro Raw Rundown. Head over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheInsideNetwork, where tomorrow, Finn Martin and I will go through Survivor Series predictions. We can hear what he has to say. After editing a wrestling magazine for 20 years, his opinion is probably pretty good to have. And then on Patreon, it's just been what a week. We've had so many new subscribers, so many new people get involved. I want to just name and shame somebody very quickly as I'm talking about this, but we've uploaded a load of content this week. The Survivor Series 1996 review with Sondra and I, an hour and 45 minutes of us doing the sort of retro rundown for that Survivor Series. What else has gone up this week? We also have the Armageddon 2007 review went up from Cameron, who was his first show he'd ever watched, so he asked us to do a podcast on that. A new Let's Get Creative podcast with Jim Cornette talking about the 1996 Survivor Series with Sondra and I. Tonight, there's a 50-minute conversation with Finn Martin and I talking about his memories of Survivor Series. Later on tonight, there's one going up with David and I talking about Survivor Series memories. Sondra and I are doing a takeover thing for tomorrow.
It's basically a whole lot of content. And why, you know, we don't have a lot of time to do a lot of other things because we're just podcasting all the time. But it's fun. It's fun. And it's a really great weekend for wrestling. I'm excited for TakeOver. I'm excited for Survivor Series. I have to work tonight, so I can't watch TakeOver live, which is a bummer. But, I mean, I'll be watching it after that and then, you know, talking to you about it tomorrow. I don't know. There's just so much going on.
Yeah, but it's like you say, like it's a, you know, because WWE announced that now they're going to give Survivor Series the Big Four treatment next year in Houston. They're going to do four consecutive nights, NXT TakeOver, Survivor Series, Raw and SmackDown. That's going to be the same for Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and Survivor Series. So, yeah, I mean, it may just make sense when it's a big weekend to give you... Look, put it this way, before I did Inside the Ropes, I always remember on big pay-per-view weekends, I couldn't get enough. You know, I was like, I want to listen to more. And I want to talk about it more. I want to, you know, learn more. I want to laugh more or whatever. So hopefully I was just, you know, giving you a shitload of content is good. And obviously, you know, when we started Patreon, the whole idea was that we give you guys stuff for supporting us. So that's what we're trying to do. I do want to give a shout out to a guy called Dominic McCarthy. Dominic, you have pledged to us and basically, you get to choose a podcast for us to record. I've tried emailing you, but I've not heard anything back. I don't want to take your money without doing a podcast for you. So please get in touch. Facebook.com/InsideNetwork or Twitter @Inside_TheRopes. Dre and Kieran, we're about to do yours, and I'm going to email the other guy, Chris Martin, tonight to talk about his. We're going to get to that next week because we just wanted to get all the Survivor Series stuff out of the way. I think that's everything. Is there anything else I've forgotten? That was like a long diatribe.
That's all I can think of. I just woke up, so...
This is it, ladies and gentlemen. We need to navigate the waters of international time zones. But luckily, when we get in the DeLorean, the 1996 Raw series is timeless.
It is.
So we get to talk about that. So this was the night after Survivor Series. Just for people who are not on Patreon, very, very quickly. Sondra, what did you think of the 1996 Survivor Series, just in a kind of summaried way?
I thought the 1996 Survivor Series was a pretty good show. There was some stuff on it that wasn't super great. Like, a couple of the Survivor Series matches, actually. Like, the Survivor Series matches were the least interesting thing on the show, for sure. But we had The Undertaker returning as a sad bat, which was incredible and hilarious. And we had Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Bret Hart was, I mean, just one of the greatest matches ever, right? Like, it's a really, really good match. The debut of Rocky Maivia, and I did watch the Rock reacts to his debut video last night that someone had sent us on Twitter. Why isn't The Rock that endearing when he comes back to WWE? Like, I mean, he was just so adorable. He's like, oh, look at my hair shit. Like, and then he was talking about how awesome it was. Like, he was thanking Crush as he pinned him, and it was really cool. And I was like, why aren't you this nice person? Why do you just have to go and call women all sorts of names whenever you come back? Like, why can't you just be...
Well, it's funny because, like, now, obviously, you're going to... I don't know if we mentioned this, but Sandra, you're going to WrestleMania now, right?
You're breaking your WrestleMania.
And also, in the adverts for WrestleMania, they have announced... they've not announced it, but basically, The Rock's in the video, so he's going to be there.
Well, that's not shocking. It's annoying, but it's not shocking.
It is annoying. I mean, like, you know it's bad when I'm even annoyed about it.
I didn't think you would get to this point.
Like, the thing is, I liked a lot of the stuff he'd done. I loved the WrestleMania 30 thing he did with Austin and Hogan. I loved the thing he did with Ronda and Triple H and Stephanie. But the Wyatt's thing was just too much. I think it's because, like, that show, very quick, I know where this is a roll on this, how we need to move on in a second, but, like, when I was at WrestleMania 32, like, I spent more money on a ticket for that show than any other WrestleMania I'd ever been to. Because I really thought it was going to be, like, a great WrestleMania. You know, I thought they were going to go all out. And, like, I just, there was disappointment after disappointment on that show. And maybe this isn't even The Rock's fault. Maybe it's just, like, the timing of it was just the worst. But, like, you know, the Dean Ambrose-Brock Lesnar match that I had been, like, trying to argue with you guys for months was a great idea. And you guys were like, it's all right. And I was like, they're going to prove you wrong.
And they proved you wrong. And they proved you wrong.
Yeah, and then, like, Undertaker, Shane McMahon, like, it sold WrestleMania. There was an interesting story going into it. They did nothing with the interesting story. So all this stuff was happening, and then all of a sudden The Rock comes out, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, he's going to be part of the main event, because God knows, do any of us really want to see Roman Reigns and Triple H? At least this will make it a little bit interesting. And then the Wyatts come out, and I remember being there, I've said it at the podcast, where, like, the Wyatt Center clicked, and my reaction was like, oh, yes! Oh, no! Immediately. And
because you knew, like, what was coming.
I knew. And you know, I don't even think it's The Rock's fault. I mean, it's more WWE's fault for how they positioned the Wyatts. But I think the fact that he'd come out and set his name on fire and took 10 minutes to announce an attendance record, and he'd announced he was going to do something historic, and I felt the attendance record thing was a cop-out, and then he had a six-second match, which I thought was useless, and then he buried the Wyatts. Like, he just did this, like, this 15 minutes, which basically killed my love of the character for a while. So, yeah, I'm hoping that I can go back to liking him again. And the Rock reacts thing did make me like him again a little bit. So hopefully it's the beginning of a resurgence.
Here's hoping.
Anyway, so it's the night after Survivor Series here on Raw on the 18th of November 1996. Raw 185 on the network if you want to watch along with us. I know Martin McKee and Mel and so many other people that tweet us all the time about the show have been watching along with us. Cold open here, Sandra. No intro. Straight into the action.
Yeah, I actually have in my notes, because I always start my notes and I always, like, put intro in bold or whatever. And I was just like, or not. We're starting right out with Vince saying, here we go, you know, as Stone Cold's music is playing. So, yeah, we just get Stone Cold Steve Austin entering, which I'm not going to complain about that. That's pretty exciting. And then...
Yeah, and he looks so pissed, right? So annoyed. And then, like, they show you, like, Vader was injured potentially because of Yokozuna. Yokozuna murdered his shoulder.
Yeah.
That's why he's not wrestling.
Oh, yeah, it looked brutal.
There's no coincidence as to why that was Yokozuna's last match. You know, like... You know, and it's a shame, because I feel like if we'd watched this a couple of years before, you would have probably really, like, really liked Yokozuna, because he was a really good big man. But
I've seen some stuff of Yokozuna, and I've liked what I've seen.
Yeah, he is good, but it's just he got too big. So the replacement for Vader is Mankind. So this is like a heel versus heel match to kick off Monday.
And it's weird because it was originally supposed to be heel versus heel as well. Because if Vader was going to be fighting Steve Austin, that would also be heel versus heel, which was confusing to me. Like, if I were watching this and I didn't know that the heel turn or the face turn from Steve Austin comes at WrestleMania, I would think that this was the start of a Steve Austin face turn. Because Mankind comes out, like, Mankind doesn't wait for his own entrance music or anything. Mankind just, like, rushes out and attacks Stone Cold Steve Austin. And it feels very much like Mankind is the heel and Steve Austin's the babyface in that moment. Now, in the match, I think they both do some heelish things. You know, after the match, when Austin, like, clotheslines the Undertaker and stuff, he's still doing plenty of heelish things, but Steve Austin really didn't feel super heelish. I feel like he's already kind of walking that line.
Yeah, it's clearly began. You know, the fact that the people are starting to love him. And as Jim Cornette said on the Patreon podcast, like, the fact that he was able to go into Madison Square Garden and hang with Bret Hart was like, you know, I don't know. So the blue tick on Twitter, you made it. Like, you're there. So I really liked the chaotic kind of kickoff with Mankind attacking him, because what I liked about it was that these two guys had both lost big time matches the night before. So the beginning of the show was all about them being featured, focused. And I liked that.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even really think of it in those terms. I just kept wondering why Mankind was so angry at Steve Austin, because they hadn't really interacted. And it seemed like...
I got the feeling that he was just angry that he'd lost The Undertaker.
Okay.
Because he'd beaten Undertaker at King of the Ring. He'd beaten Undertaker at SummerSlam. So he'd never been beaten by Undertaker on pay-per-view. And, you know, this kind of like, this big match in Madison Square Garden, you know, where he'd watched Jimmy Snuka fall. I mean, we know this now, that I'm creating backstory here, but he went to Madison Square Garden and failed. He went to the Mecca and he failed. So I kind of like the idea that he was just like, nah, fuck this. I'm not waiting for his entrance. This is about me.
Yeah, I can see that. It was just a little confusing to me, because I was like, they don't have issues with each other, though, I don't think. And it felt like this was something that would happen, like, in the middle of a huge epic feud or something. And it didn't take me out of it. I thought it was really good. I thought this brawl to open, the match doesn't even start for a good 3 minutes. Because they're just like beating the shit out of each other.
Also, Sandra, Jim Ross is now officially a permanent member of the Raw commentary team.
He is, yeah.
Aren't you excited?
I am excited about that.
Yay! That's what I have in my notes.
Yay! That is good, even though he has to leave so that he can interview Sid at the end of the show. But
well, in hindsight, it's a great move because it gives some gold. Can't wait to talk about that. Lawler, for whatever reason, loves the heels beating each other up, which I didn't really get.
It was confusing. I think just the whole heel thing was confusing in general, which was the only issue that I had with this, because there was a bit of a disconnect there, but it's more of a minor nitpick, because overall, I really, really loved this segment. This match, like, once the match actually gets started, it's really good.
And yeah, like, I love the bit where, like, I think it's still during the brawl before they actually start wrestling, or maybe it is. Like, it was, I found it really difficult to write notes on this match because there was so much happening all the time.
Yeah.
But there's a bit where, like, Mick Foley picks up a chair and he goes to try and hit Austin with it, and he almost hits Paul Bearer with it, actually, before Paul Bearer gets out of the way. And then Lawler just says, "Get in there, McMahon." And Vince just goes, "Thank you, no."
Yeah. Like,
and it's like, but it was really fascinating to me that, like, you know, every week now on Raw or SmackDown, well, not every week, but, like, you know, a lot of the time we see guys getting hit with chairs, or we see, like, somebody getting put into a barricade and stuff, and it's kind of become the norm. But it wasn't the norm here, and the commentators were just going apeshit, like, with all of it. Like, they, you know, there was chaos, they didn't know what to do. Mick Foley took what I think is the best bump off of a barrier that I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. It was incredible.
So good.
Like, I mean, this, what I have written down is, this match felt too good for Raw. Because, well, I mean, so much of Raw in 1996 is not about the wrestling, right? And even when you have really good competitors in there, like when Shawn Michaels fought Bulldog, that was a good match. But it also was kind of like, it felt very much like a Raw match, and there was other stuff going on, and there was guest commentary, and there was all sorts of other, like, in this instance, Mankind versus Stone Cold Steve Austin, there were two great competitors in the ring just beating the shit out of each other and having a really, really great wrestling match. And the commentators were focused on the two performers in the ring and calling the action of the wrestling match and talking about the two performers who were actually in the ring. And this felt very bizarre to me. Like, in a good way. But it just, it didn't seem to fit in with 1996 Raw. And it felt like we started, like, with no intro, with nothing like that. It felt almost like there were 10 minutes of Raw that got cut or something, and we started in the middle.
Yeah, almost like a joined in progress thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, for me, like, and again, I've not read up that this is the case, but it really does strike me that the reason for all this stuff was basically to put over Austin and Mankind after the losses. Because if you think about it, like, exactly what you're saying is kind of what they'd want you to be saying. Like, this is too good for Raw. Why are these two guys doing this? They're so aggressive, and like all these things that you're saying, I would imagine, is kind of the thing where they're like, well, how can we sort of fix or help these guys feel a bit more special after losing the matches last night? And
this seems to be a way more effective way of doing that than
funny that, eh?
Just
when you
having
get two people
them,
booking something, it works.
Well, yeah, but like, I mean, isn't this way more effective than, you know, them getting their win back the night after?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of prefer this a whole lot. And I mean, I'm just saying, I really, really loved this opening segment.
It's interesting. I am going to start almost making a notepad of when people write comments to us on Twitter about Retro Raw, because I always remember them and don't remember the name of the person that said them. But like, somebody had said about, like, they don't really enjoy the slow wrestling pace of the shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that, because if you just watched in the last 5 years, like, it is worlds apart. But I think that over time, you'll begin to appreciate the characters more, because, like, guys aren't trying to get 25 moves in 10 minutes.
Right.
You know, they're like, we'll do what we need to do to get it over. You know, and I'm not saying, like, that everybody should be like the executioner. You know, I'm not saying that.
Yeah, but let's not have that.
Let's not have that. But, like, yeah, and Ella, and one of our new subscribers as well, she tweeted out today about, you know, the fact that she... It's really, like, bizarre for her to just watch all this stuff that had happened before she was basically a proper person, you know, and this is all going on. And it must be really jarring to watch all this stuff when you've, you know, if you've never experienced any of it, like, if you've never watched Vader stuff or Austin stuff or all that, you know, because it's kind of incredible in comparison to today.
It's so different. It's so different. And I mean, I will say, like, that's one of the interesting things about watching Retro Raw is comparing the wrestling of back then to the wrestling of today. This Mankind Steve Austin stuff felt like it could have happened on a Raw today, but it felt like it didn't belong on Raw in 1996. Mm-hmm. I think the wrestling today, I enjoy a lot more on the weekly television. I think the presentation and the story, 1996 kind of has it.
Which I think for me, like, I more prefer the wrestling from back then, in the sense of, I feel like now everybody does everything all of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and like every match has a dive and a, you know, like all the stuff that you would do, but it's like back here, like, somebody will, you know, bring something out once every 3 months and it's really special when they do. You know?
Yeah.
So I kind of prefer that element of it. But, you know, I do understand that other people prefer today's style of wrestling. It's a preference point, I guess.
I think it's more even just, like, the length of the matches. And, it, like, if I'm going to go back and watch a Raw match, I'm more likely to find, like, a really good Raw match today than I am to find, like, a really good Raw match from 1996.
That's a really good case. Because what they would do back here, they wouldn't put the great matches on Raw, because, funnily enough, the plan, Sondra, was
was to sell the pay-per-view.
You build to pay-per-views. Anyway, so Paul Bearer at one point just, you know, he's sort of distraught over what's happened to Mick Foley, that he leaves and goes to get the executioner. The executioner comes in, and then the executioner, Mankind, and Paul Bearer all put in the boots to Austin. And then something happens that I'm pretty sure is the first time that you've ever seen it. The Undertaker ran.
He did. Yeah, that was weird.
I have it down. The three put the boots to Austin. Taker makes the save. Sondra, is this the first time you've seen The Undertaker run?
I think it is. It's pretty funny, actually.
So Taker comes out, and Taker basically helps Austin, essentially, because he's getting rid of the Executioner, getting rid of Mankind. And then, Undertaker's not even, planning to attack Steve Austin, right? He's just
No, he showed up to help.
Yeah, and then, he turns around, Austin clotheslines, and Taker takes that great clothesline bump where he just lands on his feet.
Yeah.
And just, stares a hole through Steve Austin, and then Austin, retreats like a cowardly heel. So it's interesting that the last image they wanted you to have of Steve Austin after all this kind of, heroic battling against this monster Mankind is they want you to see him as, a slithering snake that's, skulking away from the Undertaker.
Yeah, it was interesting. And having Steve Austin and the Undertaker have this face-off, it was like, wait, are we building to something between these two? Is there tension here? What's going on?
Multiple stories.
Multiple stories, multiple people interacting. A fully universe. I enjoy it.
I feel like what's going to happen, if anybody's familiar with the Austin Powers movies, I think it's the third movie, I could be wrong, where Britney Spears does a song called Boys or something for it. And there's a bit where Austin Powers starts dancing at Britney because he thinks she's a robot. And it turns out that she is, and her head explodes. And I feel like Sondra's just going to get to a point with 1987 where there's so many intertwining stories that are all getting told that her head's just going to explode. That'll be the end of Sondra.
And that'll be the end of me. It was a fun ride while it lasted, right?
It was. Well, we've had one co-host die, another one had heart surgery. So we're on track.
That's true. It's interesting. What was I just going to say? Oh, on Twitter, I didn't want to not bring this up because this is my favorite new headcanon thing, right? Mm-hmm. So the Undertaker's sad tattoo thing, right? Mel on Twitter said, by the way, in jail, having a tear tattoo or something like that, I forget the way she worded it exactly because, of course, I didn't put the tweet in front of me, but she said that means that you've, done a murder, basically. So, just saying. And I was like, well, that's certainly a very interesting dimension added to Sad Bat Undertaker. And then I was like, wait, what if it's because he's sad because he thinks he murdered Kane?
I want you all to remember this, ladies and gentlemen. Sondra has just created a story that is going to make her fall in love with the Undertaker. This is where it begins. You will look back on it and say, where was the point where she turned? It's where she figured out that he murdered his brother. And that's when she falls in love with him. Because that's all Sondra needs. Murder. To win her over.
Do the similarities between Undertaker and Bray Wyatt just keep growing?
Funny that.
Murdering family members in the past. What?
Because Bray Wyatt is the Undertaker, but the problem is, they don't let him be the Undertaker. That's the issue. So we got a promo of a replay of the pay-per-view, and it's funny because, now you don't ever see, a promo kind of promoting the replay of, obviously it's on the network, but, it's not even oh my god, this thing happened, it's on the network, you can subscribe now to see it. There's passing mentions, but they're really hammering it home here that you should see it.
Yeah, because they play this twice.
They do. And then all of a sudden in the crowd there's some sort of commotion going on. And it's Ahmed Johnson randomly in the dark as the spotlight tries to find him, because God forbid they rehearse this. Now, Ahmed Johnson is in the first tier of seats, right? He's in the middle of the first tier. And Vince McMahon says Ahmed Johnson has a ringside seat. No, he doesn't!
His seats are terrible. He's just in a random aisle seat. They're not terrible what I would pay for
WrestleMania. WrestleMania.
I know.
What's happened?
I don't know. It's they couldn't get him ringside. Doesn't Ahmed Johnson warrant a better ticket?
You would think.
But so. You're right, because it's hard to even tell what's going on before commentary mentions that it's Ahmed Johnson, because it's really dark and you can't see him. It's just, you're just seeing people mill around in the crowd.
And then the thing is, and this is, this sounds like I'm being mad racist, and I'm really not. But the thing is, like, Ahmed Johnson is a very, very, very dark man, and he has a black jumper on as well.
Yes.
So it's like, it's very difficult to spot him with
no spotlight.
You can basically
just see the chains.
Yeah, you just see chains, and then later you see leather skin boots.
And the Survivor Series hat. He's wearing a baseball cap. I didn't really picture Ahmed Johnson being the baseball cap guy, but he's promoting the Survivor Series that happened last night?
There's an encore, Sandra.
There is an encore, that's true.
Sonny comes out, and like, I mean, I know everybody's probably thought this, but like, she is so hot at this point.
Yes.
Like, bear in mind, I've been with her in person when she is not like this in any way, shape, or form. It is so, like, really, honestly, if you ever are like somebody who's going to take drugs, Google Sonny 2016.
And that'll deter you.
It's not worth it. And then, like, she gets in the ring, and, you know, again, Jim Cornette explains on the Survivor Series podcast we did with him about why Sonny was kind of taken out of the managing game and put into these kind of roles. So check that out, cheap plug. And Jerry Lawler starts waving at Sonny, you know, because that's Jerry Lawler. And then, like, JR's like, say hello to Uncle Jerry, which is really funny because in real life, Jerry Lawler, like, I don't know if you know this, and it's probably going to make you hate him even more. But, like, do you know that, like, he like, so there's a point where his son Brian Christopher turns up Grandmaster Sexy on TV, and he like refuses to be called like his dad.
I've to heard be of this.
Is that?
It's
like
very
Jerry
weird.
Lawler does not want to age at all. I mean, trust me, I am in some ways Jerry Lawler. I don't ever want to age.
No, you forget I've about got a panic. It. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I've got a panic attack. I'm 31. I don't like it. It's old. But. Yeah, so Sonny's, but then it kind of made sense, like Sonny introducing her former protege. That was fine.
Well, it was interesting. It was interesting that, because when they had their amicable split, right? Because I remember them saying amicable split over and over. She said, oh, but we're still good friends. And kind of left it open, like kind of we'll see, right? And so here they're talking about, you know, Sonny is basically there to highlight Farouk and talk about her, you know, her good friend, and talk about how dominant he is and all of that, which it worked for me. I thought it was good, and I thought she did a really good job of making Farouk look good too. It was interesting because she was so coy about their business relationship. There's one point where they're trying to ask her, like, you know, is he under contract to you or something? She's like, I don't need to tell you my business. Like, that's, you know, my business dealings with Farouk and, you know, our relationship and blah, blah, blah. And so they're like, is he under contract to you? And she's like, no comment. And
mm-hmm. It's interesting because, like, the Nation of Domination is so clearly not a Sonny thing.
Right.
In terms of, like, so, like, it's fine here, but, like, it's the kind of thing that can't really continue, you know, because, like, it doesn't really, like, the idea with the Nation of Domination is that it's a lot of them are African-American. And there's a kind of a, you know, a slight kind of, like, Malcolm X type vibe to some of the stuff that they do. So having like Sonny is not like, because she's so lighthearted and like, I do bikini modeling on Raw magazine and stuff. So like, she's just not the right tone for that group, you know?
No, she does not, like, look like she would fit in the Nation of Domination.
No, she does not. But Farouk comes out with his rappers and Clarence Mason, his entourage. Such a good theme tune.
It is a really good theme, too, and you can tell they're trying to be edgy with lyrics like, bum rush your mother.
Listen, it was the 90s. We all had to experiment with stuff. What I loved was, like, so they, one of my favorite ever segments of Raw, they cut to Ahmed Johnson in the crowd, who is randomly signing autographs.
Yeah.
And, like, giving the magazines back to people.
He's not really paying attention to what he came here to see.
No, I mean, already he's a better babyface than MD today because he's in the audience signing autographs with the people.
Yeah.
But then Vince McMahon says, there's Ahmed with a front row ringside seat. No!
We can see where he is. What are you even talking about?
Like, I could almost forgive the first one. He's like, oh, he's got ringside seat, and he doesn't. But, like, he flat out says he has a front row ringside seat.
He does not have a front row ringside seat at all. Does Vince think we can't see that? Like, we're watching the show right now.
Absolutely baffled. Absolutely baffled.
It's so weird. It's so weird. Can I just say, like, the rappers for Nation of Domination, it was a little weird to me that they're white.
Yes, that is odd.
Like, I did not expect that with the Nation of Domination, because, I mean, the Nation of Domination has a lot of racial overtones, right? Like, it's supposed to be kind of like a Black Panther kind of deal. And I know that not all the members of the Nation of Domination are African American, but, like, it just, I don't know. It was just a little strange.
I think maybe the rappers thing, and I will look into it for next week, but like, I think maybe the rappers thing was almost more like they can't accuse us of doing Malcolm X stuff if we have two white rappers there.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was an intentional decision, because...
Maybe kind of out for them.
I don't know.
So I guess we'll see. But and then they cut to break, and when they come back, Savio Vega has been robbed of an entrance, Sondra.
Yeah, Savio Vega, jobber entrance.
Match is like... I mean, before the glorious intervention by Amma Johnson, there's not really much to say about the match, really.
No.
No, it's fine. But, like, basically, you know, Ahmed Johns, Savio was on the outside with one of the PG-13 guys, the rappers, and, like, then Savio gets smacked in the back with a 2x4, flung back in the ring, Farouk pins him.
Yeah, because Farouk carried Johnson, a 2x4 to the ring.
Yeah, he's got to keep him...
For protection, right? Well, and I was like, where's Hacksaw Jim Duggan?
To be fair, if Ahmed Johnson was after me, I'd probably be carrying a gun. Like, and I don't condone gun use, but with Ahmed Johnson, I'd carry a gun. Because, look at Ahmed Johnson.
No, it's true. He's terrifying. He is a terrifying human. No, they're on the outside, though. One of the things I do have noted is that it looked like they were setting up for a superplex or something on the top rope, and they both just, like, tumble to the floor. Like, they just fall off the rope, and it didn't look pretty. And then Vince McMahon goes, only in the World Wrestling Federation will you see individuals take a risk like that. They just came tumbling down in a pile of humanity. They fell off the rope, dude.
I kind of, like, maybe it's just because I grew up with it, but, like, I love how terrible Vince McMahon is in commentary.
He's
like,
so bad.
And I know that Lucy, who listens to the podcast, she had... tweeted us, and she was like, I can't get past how bad Vince McMahon is in commentary.
He's
and I'm
so
like, well,
bad.
You've got about a year left, so I try and endure it for as long as you can. And I feel like I feel like that spoiler is pretty obvious if you really think it through. Survivor Series, what happens a year later, blah, blah, blah. But what's funny is when, you know, the 2x4 shots happened and all that, and you can just see in the background Ahmed Johnson bolting towards the ring, bolting, and he's like, he chases them all off, and like, he's got the 2x4, and then Sunny is going absolutely bonkers on commentary.
She was like, I was not a part of that. I was not a part of that. I'm innocent. I did not provoke that whatsoever.
The fans were going crazy for Ahmed Johnson.
Yeah, they were. They were really into Ahmed Johnson.
Here's the thing. Ahmed Johnson was the Intercontinental Champion. He won a Battle Royal to get a WWF title shot in July on Raw. And after he had won, Farouk viciously attacked him, put him out of action. He lost his IC title. He lost his WWF title shot. And now he's back and he's seeking revenge, and he can't get to the guy he needs to get revenge against. Funnily enough, people are into that.
Well, yeah, it's a good story. And Ahmed Johnson's like, a scary motherfucker.
He is. He is the scariest man in the world. Wait till you see him in ring gear. It's even worse. Like, it's just...
I've seen
my
it.
My God. Oh, those red pants. Like,
yeah.
It could be my bedspread. Like, it's...
They're
those
humongous.
Pants so Ahmed then picks up... I've got down here. Ahmed takes a mic. I'm so excited for Sondra to hear his promos.
his promos are quite something.
And then I've got in capitals, you're going down, which is what he begins to scream.
Yeah, he starts a you're going down chant, and it's interesting. And also, you know, he basically gets on the mic and said, you know, I was in a bed for 5 months because Farouk put his hands on me, and, you know, talking about how Farouk's gonna pay and everything. He's so mumbly, it's very difficult to actually hear words. You have to really concentrate.
This was one of his least mumbly promos.
Yeah. And he's, like, I mean, like, I caught all of the words in this one. So well, I figured
some of them you will not.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Some of them are, like, some of them are so bad. But then, Sondra, it is time for the Karate Fighters Tournament.
Yes.
By Milton Bradley. It is the final match of the first round. Bob Backlund versus Sonny. I couldn't wait for it. Jerry Lawler undoing all the good work he's been doing the show by being misogynistic. Great. Cheers. And then we get pre-show comments.
Yeah, he likes the way Sonny can twist those knobs.
Sleazebag. So I figured that if WWF had came to you and said, right, Sondra, we're going to go back in time here. And we can only give you one pre-match promo, Sonny or Bob Backlund, that you would absolutely want it to be Bob Backlund.
I would want it to be Bob Backlund, and I was not disappointed.
Tell us about the promo, Sondra.
Young lady, your accoutrement has been living a slovenlier lifestyle. But Headstone here is going to put morality into your life. You got that? Stand up when I'm talking to you. I didn't tell you to sit down.
I love that he flicks up the shades part of his glasses as he does the final part.
Yeah, because he's wearing those glasses.
I love that Bob Backlund, who the year before was campaigning to be like president, is now putting over that Headstone from Karate Fighters is going to put morality back into something.
Oh my gosh. I just feel like Bob Backlund just sees random things in life and is like, this object or this person is going to put morality back into your life. It's the only way to explain the Sultan.
It's very true.
Like, and it was strange because when Todd Pettengill introduces the Karate Fighters tournament here, he goes, the man who won't be president, Bob Backlund, versus one of the first ladies of the World Wrestling Federation, Sonny.
So cruel. He'd been campaigning, Sondra.
Had he?
I don't know. Well, not really. He'd been, like, fake campaigning, you know.
I really feel like
he'd been campaigning
to see
at WWF shows. Like, you know.
That sounds
I've
amazing,
actually got,
to be fair.
I need to find it. I remember buying it off eBay a couple of years ago. I bought, a badge, WWF Backlund for President badge. So, I need to find it, actually, to make sure I've still got it. So we get to the match, and Sonny is, they go back and forth. Sonny's trash talking him a lot. He's trying to tell her to shut up.
Well, Bob Backlund tries Sonny's to cheat right off the bat. He goes, wait a minute.
Which
wait
is not
a
very
minute.
Moral.
No, it's not very moral at all. I feel like there's a double standard going on here. And Sonny was like, nope, I'm not going to wait. And he was like, no, hold on. And he gets back to, you know, fighting and everything. She's like, I'll never stop until I beat you, Mr. Backlund. And Sonny is so into it. And Bob Backlund is so into it. And this was by far the best round of Karate Fighters we've seen as of yet. Because both performers were so invested in the Karate Fighters and winning. And when Sonny wins, she is beside herself being happy about
it. She's the most
this.
Annoying winner of all time.
She is. Na-na-na-na-na. I won the match. Na-na-na-na-na. And she, like, does a dance in his face. And Backlund's just irate. And, like, what does he say to Sonny? Like, don't commute to me. Like,
He can't word it. Like, she's the most annoying winner ever. He's so great because he goes so crazy when he loses.
Oh, yeah. He sells it so perfectly.
But here's my question, Sondra. So they show us the brackets, and there's a conundrum ahead.
Yes.
Next week is supposed to be the first semi-final between Psycho Sid, the World Wrestling Federation champion, and Mr. Perfect.
Yeah. So, because we were talking about this on Twitter with, who was it? I can't remember now. Was it Ben? I don't know. But did they tape these all at once?
I hope so.
I hope so too. Because it seems like they would. It's not like, because I mean, obviously, like, their outfits and everything are different from Raw. So it's not like they're taping Karate Fighters at the Raw arena.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is we've only seen the first round, so we don't know if they're going to be wearing the same gear, you know? I mean, I know Todd Pettengill is, but, and so, well, Jerry Lawler always wears the same gear, but I guess we'll find out next week if we're going to get Perfect and Sid, or will Phineas get a bye because he's the one still employed? I don't know. I never thought I'd be so intrigued by a Karate Fighters match.
I really, really am intrigued, though, and I really just want to turn on Retro Raw and fast forward right when we get done recording this so that I can find out. Because I refuse to watch ahead, but...
Of course. Well, really it's difficult. And then you've got a whole weekend of wrestling to watch. So it's almost like... I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. We see Sid doing weights backstage, which I think is actually... You know, not enough wrestlers are doing weights when they're backstage.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you're a WWF superstar. You should be doing weights. And we cut to Vince.
Oh, boy. I have transcribed most of what Vince says. Oh, have you? Here.
Good, because I started transcribing it and then I kept like falling off. So, like,
it took a long time to do because this whole eulogy for Shawn Michaels as World Wrestling Federation champion...
So, very briefly, let me just say what I think, and then just you go ahead and tell people what he says. Vince basically takes his glasses off, makes an impassioned, what I've got it down here is, makes an impassioned love letter promo on Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Tries to put Sid over as a heel as the fans in the arena are chanting Psycho Sid. And the best part of the whole thing is, like, they are selling the fact that Jose Lothario had a heart attack with a graphic showing his picture saying encore tomorrow night, 8/7 on pay-per-view. Oh, God.
Yep.
But anyway, Vince has a lot of interesting stuff to say here. What does Vince say to the audience about old HB Shizzle?
Okay, oh gosh. It sounds like Vince is eulogizing because he's like, first, we need to reflect upon the events of last night, right? Like, he's mourning a loss. But, like, remember when Miz and Maryse came out all in black to mourn the Intercontinental Championship after Miz lost? That's what Vince is doing here in promo form because Shawn Michaels is no longer the champion, right? He looked like he was going to cry the whole time. And
he looked more gutted here than when he had to legitimately go on Raw 1994 and say that Randy Savage had left the company.
Yeah. Like, you would think that someone died, given how he is talking right now. And Jose Lothario didn't die, apparently, because he's in San Antonio, where he refused medical attention, by the way. Shawn Michaels, like, because the whole night Vince has been mentioning Shawn Michaels because he just can't stop talking about Shawn Michaels. And he keeps mentioning, we don't know if Shawn Michaels is going to be able to join us here tonight because he accompanied Jose Lothario back to San Antonio. And now he says that Jose Lothario refused medical attention, which is stupid. Like, if you have a heart attack, you should probably not refuse medical attention. Like, go to hospital, dude. But then Vince starts in and he's like, listen, we can reflect back on those events, reflect back on what kind of a champion was Shawn Michaels. Not that he won't be again. Shawn Michaels, obviously the most charismatic WWF champion we've ever had. Certainly the most flamboyant, the greatest showman perhaps in the WWF. But a lot of people don't like him. Let's face it. He dances. He has long hair. Shawn Michaels is somewhat of a ladies' man. And then Jerry Lawler pipes in, he's cocky and he's arrogant. All right, I'll give you that. He's conceited. But then Vince continues, last night, Shawn Michaels proved something, I think, to everyone. When Shawn Michaels had the opportunity, perhaps, to retain the WWF title with the superkick, Michaels went outside to aid his mentor, Jose Lothario. In essence, he cared more about his fellow man than he did the WWF championship. In my mind, that speaks volumes for Shawn Michaels. Yes, he may be a ladies' man, but considering what he did last night, Shawn Michaels proved beyond a shadow of a doubt, as far as I'm concerned, he's a man's man, and deserving of a rematch with Sid.
Now, there's so much to unpack.
You know, I actually have in my notes, oh boy, this whole speech. Vince looked like he had tears in his eyes over Shawn losing the belt, and a man's man? So much to unpack there.
Here's the thing, right? First of all, the most charismatic WWF champion we've ever had. I'll grant you, Bret Hart's not the most charismatic guy in the world. Hulk fucking Hogan.
Yep.
Like, even people who don't like Hulk Hogan would tell you he's more charismatic than Shawn Michaels.
He's more charismatic than Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, stripper dancing does not equal charisma. At all. He wears assless chaps. So, okay, flamboyant, we'll give him. But, like, the thing that's weird is, like, Vince just comes across here as so out of touch.
Well, it sounds like he thinks people don't like Shawn Michaels because he has long hair.
Because that's the problem. Like, But the thing is, like, and I remember thinking this, why didn't they get as sort of like, I didn't think it at the time in the way I'm verbalizing it now, but there wasn't something that was, there was something not clicking about Shawn Michaels as WWF champion. I just don't think he was likable.
He's not likable.
Nobody buys into the routine of him, you know, that nobody bought in that he cared about. So like him going to help Jose Lothario is like, well, we've been watching Retro Raw for 2 months now, and I, every single episode they're on together, it's Jose trying to pep up Shawn Michaels and Shawn Michaels ignoring him at all points.
Yeah. Like, so like I always kept forgetting about Jose Lothario, to be honest. Like, he just, they mentioned him, and like, he was in that match with Vader and Cornette versus Jose Lothario and Shawn Michaels, but he just always seemed so background. Like, he didn't really matter that much. Like, I noticed Clarence Mason more with Farouk, and he didn't do anything with Farouk at all. Like, on the show today, Clarence Mason really didn't have a whole lot to contribute at ringside. Not that Clarence Mason's going to stand a chance against Ahmed Johnson. But
by the way, ladies and gentlemen, just to give you a lovely scoop here, I am in communication as we speak with Clarence Mason about coming on to Inside the Ropes for an interview. So stay tuned. I'm working on it as we speak.
That's really exciting, actually.
It's not as exciting when his real name is Herman Stevens, but
I don't
know.
Care what his real name is. I really like
I'll
Clarence
call him Clarence Mason.
Mason. I don't know why, like, because I haven't seen that much of Clarence Mason, but for some reason I just really like him.
Yep. And unlike if you read the Survivor Series notes on Patreon, when Stalker's now your least favorite wrestler. makes me laugh. So this promo is kind of weird. Vince is trying to put over the sort of like courageousness of what Shawn Michaels did at Survivor Series, and I think the problem is that like nobody buys Sid as a heel, and adults really kind of hate Shawn Michaels, and or because the problem is you've got a lot of stuff going on, right? You've got like Sid, who's mental and people like him. You've got Steve Austin, who is kind of like a bubbling baby face on the rise. You've got Bret Hart, who's the legend that everybody loves. You've got The Undertaker, who's this cool alternative guy. Like, there's so many other big name baby faces that work better than Michaels.
Mm-hmm.
When all Michaels had to do was turn heel and he'd be the best heel in the company, you know? So it was a weird thing where they just weren't, you know, the Roman Reigns comparison could be there, really.
Yeah, it really could be. And it's interesting, it probably doesn't help that we started doing Retro Raw leading up to Buried Alive, where Shawn Michaels didn't even have a match. So I really haven't seen that much of Shawn Michaels as babyface champion. So I don't feel like I've seen enough of it to judge. But what you're saying absolutely coincides with just, I haven't cared about Shawn Michaels as champion at all. And yeah, Vince says something at the end, like, they say all's fair in love and war, but that was definitely unfair to a certain extent, whether you like Shawn Michaels or you don't, or whether you like Psycho Sid. And he sounds like he has to kind of spit out the words, like, whether you like Psycho Sid over Shawn Michaels.
Because he's like, Michaels aided Jose Lothario and he cared more about his fellow man, and that in my mind speaks volumes. He may be a ladies' man, but he's a man's man or whatever. And I'm like, who cares?
Which, again, calling Shawn Michaels a man's man when he is such an incredible gay icon. Like, how do they not see this?
I've always had, right, I'm not going to swing too far into this tangent, but like, I've never understood the term a man's man, because that just sounds like a gay man, really.
Yeah, it does. Like,
but like, the irony is that a man's man is supposed to be like the opposite of a gay man. It's supposed to be like a man who's like, you know, he's a man. He has sex with women and he builds things.
Yes.
I like,
you know, the lumberjack song.
He's a man. So like, yeah. And so then we go from that, and then we're going to get some tag team action, Sondra.
We are.
So Leaf Cassidy is not with Marty Jannetty because obviously he was injured at Survivor Series and he ends up kind of leaving. So of all the people they could put the heel Leaf Cassidy with, they put him with the babyface Sparky Plug, Bob Holly.
So Bob Holly was a babyface then?
Yeah, and then the night before, he was in the pre-show 8-man tag team match along with Jesse James and a couple other people.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't watch the pre-show, obviously.
Yeah, I'll send you the match, but like,
actually, I think Shane sent me a link to it, but I haven't had time to watch it, so I do
got,
plan
like,
to check
Billy
it out.
Art stuff, and it's got all that kind of, like, all the other stories are kind of on that, and like, well, the reason that I'm going to tell you this one thing, and this is going to make you go and watch it. Jesse James comes out singing his theme tune.
Okay, yeah, I need to go watch that then. That's enough. So I'll absolutely check it out.
Because Leif Cassidy's like angry, right?
Oh, he's and so like, angry.
Bob Holly's like slapping the fans' hands and stuff. Like, what's going on? Because I remember, like, I'd watched this Raw before I'd read up on the Marty Jannetty thing. And well, this was why I read up on it, to be honest. And I was like, why the fuck is Bob Holly with them? Like, that would be, in today's WWE, that would be like watching SmackDown and seeing one of the Usos come out with Apollo Crews.
Yeah, that wouldn't make any sense.
So, it was pretty, you know, straightforward match. Phil LaFon hit a sick suplex to finish the match and pin Leif Cassidy. Like, it was like $1 million dream into like a suplex.
It was really good. And as Lawler goes, "Where's Jim Ross when you need him? What do you think that was called?" And Vince goes, "I don't know. It was called successful."
Oh, so good. And then, you know, you're asking where JR is. JR is backstage talking to Sid as they get ready for their interview. And Sid takes JR's hanky out of his pocket, wipes his belt with it to make it shinier, and puts it back in his hanky, back in his hanky holder bit. Which is such a Sid thing to do, right?
It is such a Sid thing to do. Can I just say, like, I had to rewind a couple times when Captain Lou Albano came out with Furnace and LaFon.
Well, the thing is, he didn't really come out with Furnace and LaFon. He came out in front of them.
No, he was behind them.
Or he was behind them. See, he was behind them, but he wasn't with them. There was no interaction between. It was like LaFon and Furnace had come out, and then like Lou Albano just took a wrong turn from catering.
I was just confused as to why he was there and what was going on. Because like the way he walked out with them, it looked like he was going to be managing them or something. And so I was like, is there no fanfare for them being managed by Captain Lou Albano? Like, that seems like it should be a thing. I mean, Paul Ellering got a lot more fanfare for managing the Authors of Pain.
Yes. Well, luckily, Phil LaFon and Doug Furnace are not going to be managed by Captain Lou Albano, thankfully. So it's time for the main event promo, Sandra. Sid comes out.
Well, after Doc Hendricks tells us that we can own a piece of the Survivor Series rope. This is a thing for $59 plus $8 shipping and handling.
Well, actually, in my notes, I had it that Sid comes out for a little bit and then they go to that. So that was why I was going in that direction. Just so you know, ladies and gentlemen, I was going in the chronological notes here. But what I do have about what you're saying is Survivor Series top rope plaque. I want one so bad. $59 is a steal, Sandra. Part of the Survivor Series rope. Part of the rope that Sid won the WWF Championship.
I mean, it's just a piece of a rope with a picture of Sid.
Uh-huh. I'm struggling to understand where you're seeing the badness in this. Like, where is the problem in this? This is a glorious piece of merchandise. You can hang this up in your living room and be reminded when you're feeling down and depressed and angry at the world when Trump is president. You can look up and see the beacon of hope, which is the top rope that represents the night Sid took it to the man and proved he was not in the little league and proved that he could make an old man have a heart attack. People would still cheer him the night that Sid got to the top of the mountain.
Fair enough. This is why you collect a lot more wrestling memorabilia than I do.
I should be selling shit. That was good. Anyway.
That was good. That was really good. I think you sold it better than Doc Hendricks, frankly.
The good doctor, Doc Hendricks.
Yeah.
But yeah, the crowd were like so into Sid though, like
so and, you know, into him. He was like the biggest babyface in the whole world, which makes Vince's whole like, and you know, Psycho Sid and his dastardly actions thing. It just doesn't fit. It's such a disconnect because Sid is like, so over.
And luckily, the title has made him more mental. Thankfully, yes. You know that's a, so here we go. You wanted to talk. You know, you'd written down Vince. I'm sure you've got this written down as well. Actually, the like. Vince said some shit, but Sid said some shit. Sid said some shit. He turns around and he says, "I have great respect for Jose Lothario, but when you get on the apron, you become part of the game. And when you play the game with the man, only misery can come with that."
No, what he said was, "But you put your ass on the apron and became part of the game."
Well, I was trying to go, this is a PG podcast, Sandra. I'm trying to not say ass here. There are ladies podcast, listening.
You're hilarious. There's it's a like lady speaking.
You're not a lady.
Yeah, that's true.
You're like Like, Robert's more of a lady than you are.
Did you almost just say you're the worst lady I know?
Maybe. As the evil cackle comes in. So Sid basically like agrees to a rematch with Shawn Michaels. And then like JR, to be fair, is asking the hard-hitting questions. And when I was watching it, the thing that struck me is, you know, the guys that are mentioned in sort of title contention, you've got Vader, Undertaker, Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, and Bret Hart. And I don't know if there's ever been a time where so many top headline guys from that have been successful across the world have been in contention for the belt at the exact same time. And it just kind of makes you think, because like now, like there's usually like one person that goes after the belt, and there's maybe two, but like here there's like five.
Yeah, and any one of them kind of has a claim to it, which is interesting.
Yeah, like you could realistically see any five of them win the belt. Well, I mean, Vader's maybe like a little bit below the realism of it, but like the other four for sure, you could imagine Taker, Austin, Shawn, Bret all winning the belt. So like, It's interesting. And then Sid had just one of the best phrases. He's talking about Bret Hart, and he says, "Well, your comeback in the wrestling, the World Wrestling Federation, ends December 15th when you have to face me, Bretman, Hitman."
He definitely stumbled over his words. "Is Bret, my friend, you're trying to make opportunity. You're trying to make reputation through going through this door. Well, your wrestling comeback in the wrestling World Wrestling Federation will end like that on December 15, because you have to face me, Bret Man, Hit Man. You have to face me." I love Sid.
I love him so much.
I just love him. Because he says, you know, two men enter, and on December 15, when the smoke clears, I will be standing, and I am the master and ruler of the world. I think he calls himself the master and ruler of the world, like, three times in this one promo.
Well, I feel like if you were the master and ruler of the world, you would want to, like, clarify it.
That's true.
You'd be like, "I want to let you know one more time I'm the master and the ruler of the world." Like, yes. You know, you want to get that point across. This isn't like going to a shop and picking out a sandwich. You are the master and the ruler of the world.
Yes, and the man. Don't forget the man.
And the man. And
he is the man and the master and ruler of the world. And he wants to let us know.
And he's going to beat the Bret Man.
The Hit Man. That was glorious. I love Sid so much.
Oh, he's so good. So I'm going to give this show a good old thumbs up, because I thought it was a really effective episode. I really enjoyed the Austin Mankind stuff. I thought it really kind of like brought them back into contention after losing the night before. I thought the Ahmed Johnson Farouk stuff was pretty captivating, actually. The Karate Fighter thing was fun. The suplex by LaFon was great. And then the Sid promo made me laugh so, so hard. So like, there is nowhere my thumb can go here but up. But what about you, Sandra, for this here episode?
You know, initially I was leaning toward thumbs in the middle, because the Austin Mankind stuff, I really, really liked it as a segment, but it was just a little confusing to me. So I think there was a bit of a disconnect, even though it was so, so good. Mm-hmm. And like some of the stuff in the middle I thought was, you know, kind of good, but not like, but I mean, on a show with this Sid promo and with the Karate Fighters, and the Austin Mankind stuff was super, super good. So I have to go thumbs up on the show as well.
So there you go. We are edging towards December 15th in Palm Beach, Florida, for In Your House, where Sid will face Bret Hart for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. Next week on the show, Bret Hart will return to action on Raw against his brother Owen Hart, the first time they've competed in the ring together in some time on TV.
I'm excited for that. When they mentioned that, I was like, ooh, we're getting Bret versus Owen.
Which should be fun. It should be a lot of fun. So, yeah, good episode as always. Check us out on Patreon if you want to hear our Survivor Series coverage from 1996 and our Buried Alive one. Yeah, thank you for everyone who's supported us, whether it's coming to a live event or listening to the podcast or subscribing on Patreon or any of those things. We appreciate it very much. If you're just listening to this on Saturday night when it goes out, there's obviously tons of stuff up. It's probably going to be Sandra and I covering Survivor Series, only because David is moving house and his cable is not going to be set up in time to watch Survivor Series. And I feel like we're going to want to talk about it.
I feel like we're going to want to talk about Survivor Series. Yeah.
So if Sandra and I can get our shit together schedule-wise, we could try record something Monday. I'm hoping we can.
It looks likely on my end, so I'm hoping.
Yeah. Yeah, so hopefully we can get it, because I think that, you know, we all want to hear what people think before Raw, right? So we'll get to that. Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at inside_the_ropes. I almost messed that up, Sid style.
You did. He's seeping into our podcast. So yeah, and the thing is, guys, this is like it's a really fun weekend, right? It's like you've got TakeOver, you've got ICW Fear and Loathing, you've got Survivor Series. I mean, if you're in the US or something, like, why not go to Fight TV and order ICW Fear and Loathing? You know, Finn Balor, Joe Coffey, who's been in ICW and WCPW, going up against Kurt Angle, the Dudley Boys. Mick Foley's going to make an appearance via satellite. Ricochet's going to be on the show. There's a great women's three-way with Viper involved in it, and Kaylee Ray. Like, there's tons of stuff on there. So, like, if you're in the States, like, that's a cool thing to do in the afternoon before Survivor Series, see some wrestling. I'm going to be going along to that show. And then Survivor Series, where hopefully they will give us good end to the stories.
I'm hoping. I'm looking forward to it. So we'll see what happens, but...
So thank you very much for listening. And just remember, ladies and gentlemen, if you ever see your mentor on the ground clutching his chest, just remember that that's more important than the World Wrestling Federation Championship, because that will make you a man's man.
Your mother. Now listen what I'm saying. It's for real, not playing. Farouk is the man. Hit your knees and start praying.
Nation, a domination.
Got power like the bear, but quick like the cat. Put two and two together. Feel your face on the mat. You count the stars while the ref counts three. Hope you like the look and feel us, cause that's all you're gonna see.
We are the nation, a domination.
He's harder than a rock and he can't be stopped. Step to the side unless you wanna get dropped. The boys from the hood are on the MIC. Spitting out the rhymes, it's JC Ice and Wolfie D. Clarence Mason is the boss, crossing T's and dotting I's. He tells the truth, the whole truth, and never tells a lie.
Nation, a domination.